audio on demand from Vision Christian Media.
The story.
The last tour we did was in Mackay. We did all these tours and that was massive party life. I'm talking like countless nights, no sleep, like 3, 4, 5 nights, no sleep, traveling, smoking weed, drinking, taking uppers. You know, police were called, often like damaged hotel rooms, stuff like that. And then I came home from that tour and I said to Mum, I'm done. I don't want to go back to music anymore. It's not what I thought it would be. It's empty. I'm empty.
G'day, I'm Jimmy Colfax. Welcome to The Story. Well, in 2002, Joseph Biro had his wildest dream come true. He became the lead singer for his favourite hard rock band, Superheist. They appeared to be on the verge of international fame, and everything seemed to be going their way. But then, everything came crashing down. Joseph says that even though he had experienced great success, he still felt an emptiness inside that he tried to fill with drugs and the rock and roll lifestyle. We'll find out how God set him free as he has a chat and shares his story with Eric Scatterbo.
Joseph Biro, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Eric.
Glad to have you with us. And it was your friend, Jeff Marsh, who recommended you for an interview.
Yes.
Now, you work with him, is that right?
I do. Yes, I do.
The only problem was that he got the name of your band wrong, your former band. He thought it was Superheist. And I did a Google search and I got all these garage mechanical kind of stuff. And I'm like, no, apparently they weren't very big.
On you, Jeff. Good job, mate.
Jeff Marceau, he's quite proud of you. He said, no, you have to find out Joseph's story. It's quite an amazing story. And as we just heard in the introduction, you were like almost every rock star or aspiring rock star's dream. You came in and you were just about going to get this international contract. I mean, it looked like everything was in front of you. Was that going to be a dream come true?
Yeah. At that stage, it was definitely a great height in my life. Definitely. And I thought right there and then it was the pinnacle, you know, that it couldn't get much better than what it was at that stage.
50,000 adoring fans screaming, singing along with lyrics you wrote.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a buzz. Yeah, it was definitely a buzz. It was a rush. And yeah, I mean, to come into a band, to sing for a band who I loved and adored, they were my favorite band at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I knew all the lyrics.
Just as a fan.
Just as a fan, yeah. So what actually happened?
Well, we're going to get to what happened and how you stepped in and became the lead singer for your favorite band. But let's just back up for a moment and find out what was life like before Superheist for you.
Yeah, so before Superheist, I was musically, I was in a band with my brother and with a group of guys that were really tight. And we were in a band called From the Inside. Music was something I really loved. I loved singing and sharing my passion in my vocals. And I guess probably from a young age, my anger, you know, hence heavy metal. But I was raised in a beautiful European home with a Hungarian family. My parents divorced when I was 7. And my parents actually didn't like each other much, so I was involved in the chaos in the midst of that that time. And so went to school, dropped out of school year 10. I was smoking pot and drinking quite heavily back then, and so just doing the whole band thing, you know, trying to find purpose, try and find acceptance and the community, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit rebellious even back in those days. That was me prior Superheist, you know, playing in the pubs, playing in the nightclubs, playing parties, mm-hmm. getting smashed on the alcohol, yeah, all that stuff.
So now at that time, did you think, oh, if I just become a rock star, everything is going to be great? I mean, is that kind of what was your dream at that time?
Pretty much, yeah, to have a hot girlfriend, you know, and
it wasn't real complicated.
Yeah, no.
Hot girlfriend, being a rock star.
Yeah.
Everything's fantastic.
Yeah, man, living the dream.
So then what happened? How did you get a chance to audition for your favorite group?
So we got the Superheist support nationally. around Victoria. So we did three shows with Super Heist supporting them. We got the first slot.
You were the opening band for...
That's right.
For your favorite group.
Yeah. So the whole band was actually in awe of Super Heist and the dynamic.
Because they had been around for like 7 years before that?
For a fair while.
Okay. Yeah. So they're already established. You heard of them. They had a few hit singles.
Yes. Yes. I had the albums and the EP and just love the music and love the sound and the definitely the direction they were headed in. And so they were like rock royalty in Australia, you know, above any other band in my eyes. And so the whole band loved them, and we were touring with them, and we were buzzing out.
Yeah, so I mean, that's pretty cool for you guys to begin with.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But then what happened?
So on one of the shows, it was Berwick Town Hall, and it was like 2,000 kids. It was an all-ages show. So we had played, and a band called Another Race played second, and then Super Heist were headlining. And the lead singer at the time, something had happened. He was not well. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of why he couldn't sing, but he pulled out, and there's 2,000 fans screaming Super Heist, and there's no one to sing, right?
Sounds like something out of a movie. Yes. We need someone who knows the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then you put your hand up?
Yeah, well, he asked Wes from Another Race to do it, and Wes said, no, he doesn't know the lyrics, or he probably didn't like the music or whatever. So I did, and I said, I do. And he said, you want to sing? And I'm like, oh, come on.
Do
like,
I?
Are you serious? So all my friends are there, and they're like, what's going on? And Joey's singing for Super Heist. Can't believe it. And it's just crazy. So I get up, and the show goes awesome. And anyway, I leave, and the show's been done. The fans were fed something. I don't know if they enjoyed it, but they were fed something, and it was just like a whole surreal moment of what actually just happened, and am I actually really alive right now, or is this a dream?
So you just went from, you know, being an okay band to being like to the upper echelon of, I mean, a band that was well known.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like diving straight in, you know,
learning. In the deep end.
Yeah.
But you did okay.
I did okay, yeah. I mean, okay, I think. Well, I guess.
Well, they asked you back, so you must have done all right.
Yeah, yeah. So then after that show, then they rang me and they said, we've got a Channel V, which is an Australian show, which is quite large on a scale of shows, and it's a music show. And they asked me if I would do three live-to-air, like national TV shows, and fill these spots because Rod couldn't do them.
So for whatever reason, their normal lead singer wasn't available.
Yeah.
They needed someone.
Yeah.
So that guy did okay the last time.
Yeah. So they asked me.
Yeah.
And I asked the band first. You know, I said, guys, you know, I've been put in this situation. You know, I could feel the gravitational pull. You know, I could feel what was going to happen, you know, already. And so could they, you know. And it was a moment of where my loyalty sort of if I'm honest, sort of...
That would be a dilemma.
It was a dilemma.
Like, you could have your dream come true, but you'd have to abandon your mates.
Yeah, absolutely. And my beautiful brother, like my brother Leslie, you know, was in the band and such a great musician and great bunch of guys. We were like family, you know. And then, so I said yes to this show that they said, yeah, yeah. The deal was that that From the Inside would have publicity from it, and that there would be a dynamic push for us as a band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It could be positive for your old band.
Yeah. And so what happened was I did the first show. The first show was Bendigo, live to air.
National TV.
National TV.
Wow, you're starting off right at the top.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It's still bizarre now, man, to think it actually happened. And then second show, we had a meeting, and they had a meeting, and they said, oh, do you want to come into the meeting? And I said, do I have to be there? And they said, well, you kind of do, you know. So I went in, and they said, oh, look, we've been talking as a band and as management, and the record company's been on the phone after the first gig. Everyone's so super impressed with you, man. Like, you know, we want to offer you the front man position of Super Heist, you know?
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, right there and then at that time, I thought, do you mean as a feeling? Like, it didn't quite click. And then they mean like record contract, like sign in to the group,
like
to be
the lead singer.
Yeah, and
wow.
Right there and then, honestly, you know, if I thought heaven was like anything, right there and then, of course, I was completely wrong. But you know, I thought right there and then was my was the moment I was experiencing heaven at its peak.
You're listening to The Story. Today, Eric Scatterbo is chatting with Joseph Biro. He's the ex-lead singer of the Melbourne hard rock band Super Heist. And as we've been hearing, he was a big fan of this group, and through a series of events, he became their lead singer. He thought this was going to be heaven on earth. However, unfortunately, it became nothing short of a nightmare. We'll find out what happens to him and how he eventually calls out to God for help when we return.
If this program has highlighted something you'd like prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. Call 1-800-PRAY-FOR-ME. That's 1-800-772-936. It's a free call. Or text 0401 132 888.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Colfax, and this is The Story. We're continuing with Eric Scatterbo chatting with Joseph Biro. He's the ex-lead singer of the Melbourne hard rock band Super Heist. As we've heard before the break, they were his favourite band, and through a series of events, he became their lead singer. He thought that this was going to be the ultimate heaven on earth. However, things did not turn out as Joseph had expected.
So what happened was I did the contract straight away, went into this amazing festival called Homebake, which is in Sydney at Homebush Stadium, 20,000 people playing alongside all these big bands in Australia. So I'm playing alongside all these stars, all the rock stars who I thought they were, and I'm just like in awe of like, is this seriously happening? Like, wow, I'm doing this. So I'm just like gone from like literally playing to 50 people in pubs around Melbourne to like playing to thousands and thousands of people. And the pressure came in pretty hard because a lot of people, fans were like on the website, were like abusing me, saying that I'm nothing and I'm compared to this, that I need to go and the old singer needs to come back. So
yeah, I mean, it's always hard to replace somebody that people like.
Yeah,
I mean, they're never going to be happy no matter what you do because you're never going to be him.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that was the biggest battle through life till now, is to find out who I really am, you know?
And, yeah. So while all this is happening, there's also something happening inside of you, this emptiness.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I had an addiction to pot and party drugs before I came into Super Heist. So as you can imagine, coming into Super Heist, all these dealers and these runners and these party boys and party girls were like coming to the shows and they were just filling me with drugs, and the drugs were free. So it was just like, bang, heaps of sleepless nights. I was known as the kid. They called me Joey the Kid Biro in that scene. And everyone was like, hey, the kid,
you're cool. Because you were younger than the other band members.
Yeah, there was a 10-year gap. So I was 21 when I joined Heist and when I signed that deal with Shock Records. And then they were all 31, so they were all 10 years senior to me. And they were all sort of deeply rooted already in what was going on and accustomed to it, which I was a foreigner, you know, like a little lost sheep, you know, basically. And, so the drugs became really, really important. And free alcohol every show, you know, the backstage room was full of vodka, full of bourbon, full of beer, full of all sorts of different stuff. And then I was, you know, constantly, you know, seeking some kind of high, you know, like to be awake. I love to be awake. I was so desperate to be awake. I didn't want to miss a thing. You know, I was like, I don't know, man, like an owl, you know, awake in the night. You know, I loved to be awake in the night. I loved seeing the sun come up.
Yeah. And speaking of being awake, it was late at night when you wrote one of the hits.
Yeah. A Dignified Rage. I was up at 4:30 in the morning and I grabbed an acoustic guitar. I think the first time I ever grabbed one, and I learnt a few chords. I think Drew, the bass player, showed me a few chords. So I learnt these chords and I wrote that song there and then in like literally 5 minutes.
But the lyrics kind of were hinting towards something more in your life. Is that right?
Yeah. So the lyrics, the first verse says, I try to keep positive thoughts in my mind. I've got to rise above the rest and fly with the angels, you know. And
so you're already kind of talking about supernatural angels at this point in your drug-induced state?
Yeah, Yeah, I didn't know what that even really meant, you know. Mm. I mean, it was just, I guess, a moment. And there was something deep inside me trying to surface through the rubbish of what was going on, you know, and the fame and the emptiness and whatever. And, you know, it just couldn't fill, you know. So that song was basically a cry out saying, I've got no regrets, the rebellion, you know. Mm. I've got no soul left. Look in my eyes and you'll see that this rage is dignified. So I was just like, the lyrics I used to sing and the power of what we speak is amazing. It's really, 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 it can either bring life or death, you know, like the Bible says. And so what I wrote, I didn't really understand, but now when I look back, I understand, you know. So inside was this anger, you know, confusion. Who am I? Mm. Where am I? How did I get to this emptiness? How did this void become so big and overtake my life that I couldn't love a woman? I would cheat on my partners. Even though I had a great woman, I would cheat on my partner. I was never satisfied, you know.
So no depth in the relationships?
Well, there was, but it was only sexual depth. It was never a love depth. Mm. Although they would love me, I wouldn't love back. You know, I was quite cold inside. Mm. And, yeah, so that chorus was a cry. Mm. You know, it was a cry. I wanted to feel. I wanted to love. I wanted to go home after tour and love my family and be a bundle of joy and celebrate this rock star, this life, this heaven that I thought I was in. But I got home and I was just so empty and broken, and I would just often, I would often cry, you know. And then the last tour we did was in Mackay. We did all these tours and that was massive party life. I'm talking like countless nights, no sleep, like 3, 4, 5 nights, no sleep, traveling, smoking weed, drinking, taking uppers, you know, police were called, often like damaged hotel rooms. Stuff like that.
Basically, the stereotypical rock star lifestyle.
Yeah, basically. And, yeah, that all led to me we had a fight on tour in Mackay. And then I came home from that tour and I said to Mum, I'm done with all this stuff, you know. I'm done with this. I'm finished. I don't want to go back to music anymore. It's not what I thought it would be. It's empty. I'm empty.
Hmm.
Yeah. So as the band progressed prior to that last stint, the songs were really deep and they were really death orientated, you know.
Death orientated?
Well, yeah. There's a song called Hole in the Head that we did. And
oh, wow.
It was about drilling a hole in my head, you know, being twisted and divided and having memories of my disease. That's what the lyrics were about.
And then at some point, you went missing or AWOL from the band.
Yeah. So that's when I came home and cried to Mum, and everyone's like, where's – and I hid away in like my shell, you know. I did the proverbial turtle, you know, and hid in my shell, and I was in a pretty broken and twisted place. And I mean, all the stuff that I did and all the women I hurt and all the – messed up stuff that I'd done and the neglect of my body and the neglect of my health and the confusion of where's the music? It's gone. There's no love and passion in music anymore.
How interesting, something that you loved, making music, no longer had fulfillment or enjoyment for you.
Yeah. The music should have been the most important thing because it's a great privilege to lead people in music, you know. But at that time, it took the back seat and everything else took front seat, you know, and right at the back somewhere or right at the bottom of the toes was this beautiful thing. And it was just blocked by my flesh and by my desires to fill this chasm, you know.
But of course, the Lord never intended these things, however nice they are, to ultimately fulfill that emptiness of the human heart.
Yeah.
So we want to get to eventually how he does fill that emptiness. What happened after you left the group?
So I got a job with my brother. Worked for a fair few years doing that.
So I just left the rock star lifestyle and just got a job just like a regular guy.
Yeah. And lived under the shadow of this is Joey from Super Heist. Did you know this is Joey from Super Heist? Oh, this is Joey from Super. Oh, wow, this is Joey from. And everyone was like introducing me like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would just cook me. Like, it would twist my head because after a while, it was a good thing for a while, but after a while, it was a bad thing because I was reminded that it wasn't really important, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but the thing about it was that was dangerous was, again, people would want to know me. So when I started to sell drugs, I started to sell drugs. And people would say, okay, well, I can give you this amount, or I can do this, or I can do that. So I started to use a lot more. I actually developed a really bad addiction with methamphetamine, aka ice, you know. Started to sell it, started to use it heavily because, again, there was still that hole. And there was still like the loving of being awake and loving of being a little bit twisted. So I began to use, I went from the glass pipe to injecting ice.
So getting into harder stuff?
Yeah. I began to use a lot and hang around people that like to use a lot. And yeah, it became pretty dark pretty quick. Still living under the shadow of Super Heist, dabbling in little bits of music here and there. I was in a band with John Farnham's son, Rob Farnham, and one of the ex-Super Heist members, and another band called To The Sun and all this stuff. But while I was doing all that stuff, I might have had a smile on my face, but I was using quite a lot.
And then how did you finally reach the lowest point?
So basically, I became filled with rage. No one could understand the spot I was in, and I was so broken and so confused after about 9 years, close to 9 years on the needle. I finally got to the point where everyone knew my family. I actually physically pushed my mother across the veranda. I remember my grandparents had just passed away, and I was messed up because they died, and they were so important in my life. My grandmother was a praying woman that loved Jesus and prayed for me all the time, and still convinced the only reason I'm here today is because she was interceding for me, you know. So anyway, I got an intervention order put out on me by the police that I couldn't go back home. So almost 2 years on the street, in and out of homes, picking up what I could and hanging around with some pretty nasty people that really didn't care too much about anyone apart from getting what they needed. And so I was in the gutter, literally. And I remember one night with a little bag, and I hadn't showered in like a week and a half or something because I had nowhere to go, no one to trust. I was extremely paranoid. I'd seen things. Some people would call it psychosis. I would call it demons. And I basically I yelled at the sky. I remember yelling, you know, and I yelled, and it wasn't nice either what I spoke out, but I basically said and challenged God, and I said, if you're real, then help me and get me out of this mess. Why won't you help me? How could you let me get to this point, you know? How could you let me get here? I'm dead, you know? By this stage, I'd had gone through many things with crime, many risky things that I did and managed to get away from, and I'd had hepatitis from using needles in the wrong way. Family didn't want to know me as far as I was an addict, and I was crazy, and I was stealing things from their house and taking things and standing over my mum and my brother and scaring them, and I wasn't welcome at home. So I rang them eventually, and I cried out for help, you know. I said, I need help. And they agreed to come alongside me and find me a rehab somewhere to try and get out of this hole that I was in. And yeah, so that was a horrible experience, and I wouldn't wish it upon anybody, you know. But I know there's people out there now that are in similar situations, you know. And I'm very lucky that God had mercy on me so I could be here today and doing this interview, because at one stage, man, I didn't want to live. I seriously wanted to take my life. I would rather have been dead than going through what I was going through.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to stop it right there because we've run out of time. So we invite you to join us again next time for part two of our conversation with Joseph Biro, the ex-lead singer of the Melbourne hard rock band Superheist. As we just heard, at this point in Joseph's story, he's at his lowest point and has called out to God for help. Next time, we'll hear how his life completely turns around and how the Lord is using his experiences, both in music and going through drug rehab. The Lord is now using those experiences in an amazing way for his honour and glory. As it says in the Bible, the Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. He hears their cry and saves them. The Lord watches over all who love him. Well, thanks for joining us for part one of Joseph's life journey. Until next time, I'm Jimmy Colfax, encouraging you to share your story with someone today.
Next time on The Story.
I remember one night with a little bag, and I hadn't showered in like a week and a half or something because I had nowhere to go. And I basically, I yelled at the sky. I don't remember yelling. It wasn't nice either, but I spoke out. But I basically said and challenged God, and I said, if you're real, then help me and get me out of this mess. Why won't you help me? How could you let me get to this point, you know? How could you let me get here? I'm dead, you know?
When Joseph Biro became the lead singer for his favourite band, Superheist, he thought it was going to be heaven on earth. However, it became nothing short of a nightmare as he tried to fill the void in his heart with drugs and the rock star lifestyle. We'll find out how God set him free next time.
The Story. Just another way Vision is connecting faith to life. This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.